Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Well, on Wednesday night, Game 2 of the World Series in Arlington, Globe Life Field. And the question was, could the Rays slow down the Dodgers' momentum after L.A. won the last three games of the National League Championship Series and then blew out Tampa Bay in Game 1 of the World Series? It was important that the Rays grab the lead early, and Brandon Lau, who came into this game hitting 107 in the postseason, did that.
Here's the 3-1, and a fastball swung on and hit well. Left center field, and it's gone! And what a moment this has to be for Brandon Lau. We just told you about the slump, how deep it was, how long it has lasted. And he goes the other way for a home run to give the Rays a 1-0 lead in the first inning.
Dan Shulman, the great Dan Shulman, on ESPN Radio with that call. Now, Blake Snell, in his conversations with the Tampa Bay coaching staff going into this game, had been told, look, pound the strike zone. You got to keep the ball in the strike zone because the Dodgers, veteran hitters, so talented, do not expand the strike zone. And early in the game, Snell did exactly that.
Two on, two out. And the 0-2, and a swing and a miss. He got him. So Snell bounces back, striking out Kike Hernandez, and the Dodgers will leave a couple of men on.
In the top of the fourth inning, the Rays added to their lead.
Here's the 0-1, and a swing and a line drive to right field, and it's past Betts, and we'll get to the wall. Picked up by Bellinger. Choi is in to score. Margot around third. He will come in to score. Joey Wendell with a two-run double, and the Rays take a 3-0 lead.
In the top of the fifth inning, Brandon Lau came to the plate again.
The 0-2, and a swing and a ball sent to left field, hit pretty well. Going to back Taylor, and it's off the top of the wall and gone. Another opposite field home run for Brandon Lau. His second home run of the game, and the Rays now lead 5-0.
In the bottom of the fifth inning, the Dodgers finally started to get to Blake Snell.
2-1 and a curveball, line to right field, hit pretty well. It's going to go! Opposite field home run! That ball carried right on out of here for Chris Taylor. It's a two-run shot, and the Dodgers are on the board, trailing 5-2.
And Snell allowed a couple of other runners to reach base. He was taken out of the game. Nick Anderson came in and closed out the bottom of the fifth inning. In the bottom of the sixth inning, the Dodgers trailing 6-2. Will Smith, impressive young catcher, was at the plate.
Now the 1-1 to Smith swung on, hit high, hit deep to left field, and gone. Will Smith with his second home run of the postseason. And the Dodgers get that run back from the top half of the inning. It's now 6-3.
Pete Fairbanks was on the mound for the Rays in the bottom of the eighth inning, facing Corey Seager.
1-2 the count. Set by Fairbanks, and the pitch on the way, and a swing and a fly ball center field. It's well hit. Kiermaier going back. It's gone. Seager hits it right over the 407 marker in straightaway center field, and that makes it a two-run game. It is 6-4.
And the Rays or Dodgers rally continued, and Kevin Cash decided to go with a lefty-on-lefty matchup. Aaron Loop facing Cody Bellinger with two outs in the eighth.
2-2 on Bellinger. And the pitch on the way, and a fastball in there at 95 to get him looking and end the inning. A huge out for Loop and the Rays. End of eight, and the Rays lead the Dodgers 6-4.
And Diego Castillo would get the last out in the Rays 6-4 victory. After the game, Brandon Lau was on Baseball Tonight talking about his two home runs.
I think the energy was carried over from the minute we lost last night. You know, we knew we were better than what we showed yesterday, and we had to come out and really strike first, you know, come out and do what we can do. And hitting the home run was great, and then coming in and seeing everybody, really a relief off myself,
I'm sure.
Brandon, it's Tex. You know, when you hit an opposite field home run, it's a good sign that you're locked in. You hit two tonight. What does this do for your confidence, and how good do you feel coming out of tonight's game?
Leaving today, you know, I feel a lot better than I had beforehand. That's for sure. So, not to read too deep into it, but tonight, you know, you got to come out the next day, come out the next game, and you know, do it all over again. Today means nothing now. Got to come out and do it all again.
Brandon, it's Tim, fellow Terp. What was it like watching your starting pitcher tonight, especially the first four innings?
Oh, it was a blast. There were a few times that I think he fooled me, and I knew what pitches were coming, which is pretty impressive. You know, he was looking really good tonight, and I didn't expect anything else coming out of Blake tonight.
And speaking with other reporters, Lau talked about breaking out of this slump.
To say that my mind wasn't going different places during that kind of struggle would be lying to you. You know, there were times that I wasn't feeling too good, but, you know, that's what is so great about this team, this coach and stuff like that. You know, as soon as I started dragging my feet, you know, somebody was right there to pick me up and tell me to, you know, focus up and let's get going. And just pure joy going into that dugout after hitting that home run. I mean, everybody's happy. Everyone's jumping up and down. You know, it's not an individual thing out there. It's everyone with the team and, you know, whatever helps the team win.
And the funny thing was, he didn't really show pure joy. We're going to be talking about that with Jessica Mendoza coming up in a bit. Blake Snell, who had those 9 strikeouts in 4 2/3 innings, talked about how watching game one was beneficial for him.
Yeah, I mean, I just had a good game plan for these guys. And I was able to watch them game one. So it gave me a lot more input on what I wanted to do today. But, yeah, I just wanted to attack them, make them start swinging. And I felt like I had a good game plan.
Kevin Cash talked about Brandon Lau.
The biggest reason what makes us all believe it is he's shown over time that he's a really good hitter, really good player. And sometimes, guys, you got to allow them to go through some tough patches, and he's been in one. But, man, it was exciting for the first home run, the second one, you know, really ignited him. And we've seen, look, you've seen it, you've covered him. He can go quiet for a little while, but he can get as hot as anybody in baseball. Hopefully that's the trend that we're looking at going forward.
The Rays manager talked about Blake Snell.
He was outstanding. Blake was really, really good. I know him and Kyle talked a lot leading into the game about a game plan. He followed it. He executed pitches. The slider, from my vantage point, looked like it was a really big weapon for him. He was awesome. Gave us everything that we needed.
And he spoke about his bullpen's performance in this game.
Fairly consistent to how we've gone about it in the postseason. Really like when, you know, we have an opportunity to get Nick in the game. If it's to calm a situation down, he's pretty good at doing that. He went an inning, a third, and then Pete was outstanding with, you know, his workload so efficient. Throwing strikes in the first inning, the second inning, you know, they got him. Seager got a pitch. He's been on fire throughout the postseason for the home run. He gets soft contact on Turner, stays at it, and gets 2 more big outs from Muncy and Will Smith. And then with Aaron, you know, the way they had pinch hit earlier in the game, it allowed us to get the lefty, the matchup for Loopy to get in there. And Diego closed it out.
So the series is tied 1-1, which is why after the game, Dodgers manager Dave Roberts was assessing his rotation and his bullpen as they move into the off day today.
We feel great, Dylan. We've got Walker going, we've got Julio going, and then we've got Clayton. So, and if you look at kind of where our relievers are set with the off day tomorrow, we're in a great spot. You know, playing 7 in a row, fortunately we got to kind of use different players, and I think the DH certainly helped for some players, namely Will Smith. But off day, and then now we play 2 off. I think that this old format that we're used to is certainly welcomed by everyone. Just to kind of put eyes on guys that we hadn't seen before, and we talk about it. You know, once you see guys once, twice, you just keep getting that familiarity. So that's just going to only benefit us going forward. So that's just a credit to our offense, just continuing to fight and claw to kind of make sure those leverage guys got in the game tonight.
Now, before we get to David Schoenfield and Jess Mendoza, I want to mention this. Check out Laughter Permitted with Julie Foudy. The show is back for season 4, kicking off with Academy Award-winning actress Natalie Portman, who talks about her role in founding the newest NWSL team, Angel City, and why she was drawn to soccer as a way to make an impact on society. Download and subscribe to Laughter Permitted with Julie Foudy, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jessica Mendoza is serving as an analyst on ESPN Radio during the World Series. Dan Shulman's play-by-play. Chris Singleton also serving as analyst. Jess, as I heard you talk about this the other day, and it really sort of underscored for me exactly how different this is. You were talking about not being on site at the World Series and how it's driving you crazy.
Yeah, I literally just had this conversation when someone brought up to me, I'm here at ESPN's campus where we've been doing the games on radio, and someone's like, how great has it been that you've been able to be here for all the games? And I was like, not so great. They're like, really? I mean, you have like the setup, you're in a controlled environment. I'm like, you don't want that. Like, and to be perfectly honest, this is my first World Series. So to have like the first World Series, you want the environment, the everything that being on site brings. So it's almost been anticlimactic because I've been doing, we've all been doing all the games from either our home or for a studio. You kind of wanted the World Series to be a different level.
Yeah, and you want that time on the field to just walk up to the batting cage and you catch some hitter's eye and you have a conversation about, you know, some adjustment they made or something you just saw. And instead, you're sort of locked into these Zoom calls and there's not really any access, any access. And it's just a little, it definitely feels different, but we're making the best of it. I don't think you needed to be on site to see what a relief it was for Brandon Lau to have that big night last night. I love the fact, and you pointed this out on the broadcast last night, how, you know, he hit the first home run in the first inning. And when he was rounding the bases and heading back to dugout, there was no smile. You know, because this is a guy who was hitting 107 in the postseason leading up that point. I almost felt like, and, you know, you played at a high level and I didn't, almost like he was a little embarrassed, like, oh, my God, thank God I contributed to this team. And when he hit the second home run, as you noted, the smile came out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the feeling of, I think I said exhale. Because when you are in a slump like that, you feel like everyone's looking at you. Your manager's answering questions pregame of why is Brandon Lau hitting second in this lineup when he's hitting just barely over 100. And you feel all of that. And it's like you're holding your breath. And that's what it looks like. It's a tense look. It's you know, just not something of comfort. It's awkward. And all of a sudden, after really the first home run, but definitely after the second, it was like a big, long exhale of just like all that pressure, everything he had held in. And not, this doesn't mean he's going to go and hit 500 from here on out, but just like, okay, I can do this. And the exhale, look, smile, everything that is Brandon Lau really came back.
I really felt like yesterday too, we got some insight into why Kevin Cash is such a great manager. He has this great acerbic humor and he's like sledgehammer blunt. He reminds me a lot of Terry Francona. And one of our group asked him, what about Brandon Lau? And he said, to start with, well, he's got to get an effing hit. And then he went on to explain why, keeps him in two hole because they really need him to go. He's incredibly talented. And they were hoping they would turn around. I don't think the Rays would have any chance of winning this series if Brandon Lau doesn't turn around. What about you?
Absolutely. I mean, think about it. They're riding the coattails of Randy Rosarena, and you know this. You've covered so many World Series postseason games. It doesn't work when you ride one player. It does work for a couple games. It might work for the back end of a series, but do you really think that Randy Rosarena could be the guy through however many games of a World Series after everything he has done and no one else in the lineup? Especially just from a standpoint on the opposite end. I mean, think about what the Dodgers have done to Rosarena and just giving him all breaking balls and off speed. I think he saw two fastballs even just last night, three the first night. So, of course, if you don't get your other hitters, but most importantly, your best hitter. And that's Brandon Lau. Like, as much as Rosarena has taken the attention this postseason, Brandon Lau is still their best hitter when he is going well.
Well, among the notes you sent me leading up to this, you mentioned about the Rays hitting velocity. What do you got?
Yeah, so a lot of people have been asking, okay, Charlie Morton versus Walker Buehler, who has the advantage? I hate those questions anyway, and especially when you look at two guys that have been so dominant this postseason. But I did dive in a little bit more in the numbers. And the Rays, the one thing that they have done really well, as did the Braves, and the Dodgers do too, is they hit high-velocity fastballs. Why is that important? Well, on the flip side, the Dodgers' biggest weakness this postseason has been the breaking ball. So they're 5-for-25 on that pitch. What's Charlie Morton's best pitch? It's the breaking ball. It's his curveball. What is Walker Buehler's best pitch? It's his fastball. In fact, he throws it almost 70% of the time, and he's going to throw it hard. So that to me is something I look at is just, okay, what are the Rays hitting? They have struggled against the breaking ball, but the fastball is something that they could really hone in on Buehler. And on the flip side, Morton, if his curveball is going well, the Dodgers might have a hard time getting to him.
Watching Blake Snell last night, it felt like that everything that we heard in our pregame talk with Kevin Cash played out on the field, where before the game, what Kevin was saying over and over again was he's got to be in the strike zone. Because this team, the Dodgers, will not expand the strike zone. They will not chase. He needs to get ahead. And for the first four innings, it seemed like he really did that well.
Yeah, and his words, Kevin Cash's words that kind of stuck with me is he needs to pitch in the strike zone with intent. And there's a difference there of just like a get me over curveball. Let me throw this fastball for a strike because I'm behind in the count. That's when you get beat. It's more of I'm coming into this start and I am going to throw every single pitch that I can in the strike zone, maybe just on the border with intent, meaning the slider is going to start in the strike zone, break away from it. Like the things that we saw from Snell, and it was such a night and day Blake Snell from what we've seen, especially the last two starts where he was nibbling, just trying to just almost like 70%. Let me try to just get it here because I'm worried they could crush this. He was pitching with intent and was pitching with intent in the strike zone.
And it seems like when you watch his stuff, Jess, you know, I've had major league hitters describe it to me and they just shake their heads. That's a guy who you hope moving forward, he makes a habit of pitching in the strike zone because his stuff is so unbelievable.
Well, that's what blew me away is I was watching his slider in particular. Like that thing is dirty. Like if he thinks about just throwing it over the plate and as long as it has the break that we saw last night, I mean, it is a strike until literally hitters are halfway through their swing and it's at like their ankles. So like to think that you'd want to maybe backdoor the slider to a righty kind of around the plate, maybe throw it in the dirt, like that's just not what his slider is best. I mean, it's when it looks like a strike out of the hand on its way to you. And then guess what? No, thanks. That's actually in the dirt. He has one of the better sliders in the game. And he really showcased it last night.
So I was watching your SportsCenter hit this morning, and you were talking about a pivotal moment in the game. And when the question came up, I thought to myself, okay, well, I would have been all Captain Obvious and talked about Lau's home run in the first inning. I would have talked about Blake Snell pitching the way that he did. But you went with a sequence in the eighth inning when the Dodgers were hitting.
Yeah, I do this thing, Buster, when we're, you know, you're keeping score while calling a game. And I get, you know, I've got all these different color pens. And I'm such a nerd, like just different colors for different things that I want to be able to look back on. And it kind of highlights it, whether it's strikeouts. But what I do is I have this green highlighter that I use is like, this was a big moment because I feel it in the moment. Because I can feel in that particular case was the eighth inning where Corey Seager led off that inning with a home run. Then Justin Turner follows with a double. And it's just, we know this Dodgers offense, Buster. It's here we go. Here it comes. This is what they do, right? And you're in the heart of the order. You know, the two batter, the three batter. This is where they want to be. And I just saw the way that Tampa Bay got the next two outs, but more importantly, brought in Aaron Loop, lefty specialist against Cody Bellinger. I felt like that matchup, if Aaron Loop doesn't get into the game, Cody Bellinger against Tampa Bay, he was going to get another big hit. And now the Dodgers are tying or taking the lead in this game. So that's strikeout. And not even one of the biggest horses for Tampa Bay, just to show you all of the different options they have. Aaron Loop is funky. I actually hadn't seen him before. So the sidearm, the crossfire. I'm a left-handed batter. I'm like, no thanks. Like, I don't want any part of that. But I had my highlighter on that inning in that moment because I just really felt like that's when the Dodgers offense was going to win that game. But Tampa Bay and Kevin Cash doing what they do made all the right moves.
Well, and Will Smith's line drive to Joey Wendell at third base, which basically that was the case where the ball caught Joey Wendell. I don't think Joey Wendell caught the ball. It was hit so hard and right at him. What was it, 108 miles an hour, you said?
Yeah, 100. I think it was 108.8, so it was almost 109. I mean, not that it matters at that point once you get over 100 miles an hour. But you're so right. When we had the slow motion replay of Joey Wendell, he closed his eyes, and I mean, he looked like that little kid when, like, you're about to get smacked by your mom. Like, just literally, right. Like, no. And then, oh, hey, the ball's in my glove.
Right, exactly. Now, yesterday, Carl Ravitch was on the podcast, and we were joking about how, you know, our feeling coming off game one was like, oh, my God, the Dodgers are going to steamroller the Rays. And they have all the momentum, and their offense is going great, and Blake Snell's not a great matchup. And we mentioned, of course, we could completely change that view in 24 hours, and I have. Because we saw last night with the off days built into this World Series, Kevin Cash was able to use his bullpen aggressively last night, all those big guys. Today they get the day off, and it sets them up well going forward. I still think the Dodgers are going to win the World Series, but, man, that bullpen is so good, and they're in a position to use it.
Well, I think Tampa Bay is set up to do all that they can to put themselves in a position to win the series, because then you go to game three, well-rested bullpen after using their three main guys, and now they'll be able to go again. But really, Charlie Morton, who I feel like is the best pitcher, starting pitcher on the staff for Tampa Bay, and even though he's going third, Walker Buehler is the ace for the Dodgers, like, this was really the matchup that I circled. Like, this is going to be fun. Like, these two going head-to-head, I think Tampa Bay also has a real chance to win this game, only, as I mentioned before, Charlie Morton, the breaking ball. And then if they can just get it to the bullpen with any kind of lead, you know, I think they do have the biggest chance, even though the Dodgers have the advantage from now on moving forward.
Can you imagine two more different personalities than Charlie Morton and Walker Buehler?
Like, oh my gosh. Like
Charlie Morton, the story I love to hear, AJ Hinch told us a story about how when the Astros signed Charlie Morton initially, he was coming off a poor year with the Pirates, and he gets a 2-year offer from the Astros. And the first question Charlie asks across the table is, why would you sign me to a 2-year deal? Like that, you know, this self-deprecating guy who doesn't take himself, you know, is always thinking about the things that he doesn't do well. And on the other hand, I can't think of anyone more confident than Walker Buehler.
Oh, gosh. That's exactly what I was talking about this morning, because Keyshawn Johnson was actually talking about Clayton Kershaw. I mean, he's a huge Dodger fan, but he's talking about Clayton Kershaw and all the swag. And he's like, have you ever seen someone like when they're going right, just with that more swag when Clayton Kershaw, which I thought was kind of funny because I don't really associate those two together. But I said, no. Walker Buehler, like, I mean, if you watch him, just even the way he throws, like nothing gets him down. You speak to him for 5 minutes and it's like, oh, like lacking confidence is not something that Walker Buehler has ever known or done in his life.
Yeah, I loved last week, Tim Corbin, the head coach at Vanderbilt, I asked him for some Walker Buehler stories, and he had this great one about how he called Walker into his office to basically tell him that he was not getting it done academically at Vanderbilt. And he said, I need you to go home and call your mother and decide which junior college you're going to transfer to. And Walker came back to Tim's office and had two thoughts. He said, one, you know, Vanderbilt's the place I'm going to be in. I'll figure it out. And two, if I transfer, you're going to lose your best pitcher. You know, which, you know, that is absolutely his personality. I got three more quick ones for you before we go. Last night, we were having a discussion on air about what the nickname should be for Joey Wendell. We put up a poll with it. Tell me which of these four you like. Joey Lugnut, Joey Hardhat, Joey Lunchpail, or Joey Glue Gun?
I mean, Joey Glue Gun just cracked me up just for the sake of this complete, like, silliness. But the Lugnut obviously got the vote winning. I actually wanted to add, but it was too late. We'd already put the poll up. But I wanted to add Joey Money. So I feel like, period. Like, anytime the ball's hit to him, whether it's him just making plays defensively, his at-bats and battling, like, he's money. Like, Joey Money. Like, Eddie Money, you know?
Okay. Well, and
I'm adding another one to the mix.
Well, I was going to say, I would have added yours. Truth be told, two of the entrants were my ideas, Glue Gun and Lugnut.
Yeah. I knew that had you written all over it, Buster.
you and I, it caught our attention in game one when there was suddenly after Mookie Betts stole second base, he popped up and he started talking to Willie Adames, and there was a hug between those two guys. I assumed it might have been because they saw each other for the first time this year and got a chance to say hi. What did you hear?
Yeah, Willie was talking about how it was actually more because of he was hugging, which was kind of an interesting moment because I feel like that's kind of baseball in 2020 is, you know, seeing guys in the middle of the World Series in the middle after Mookie Betts has stolen second actually have like a hug. Like, hey, man, hadn't seen you. But what he was also doing was saying, hey, man, like, I didn't think you were fast enough to actually even get here. I'm kind of impressed at your speed, like just totally giving him like crap. And then, of course, made the joke about, does this mean I get free tacos after the game? So I love that this exchange is happening, not only like a physical embrace, but like Willie talking and giving crap to Mookie for not really being that fast, but proving, OK, I guess you're faster than I thought.
Last one, I've got a piece that just posted on ESPN.com ranking the top 10 World Series performers, which was a really difficult list to go down to. And I changed my mind at the last second about who should be number one. Number one and number two are number one, Reggie Jackson, number two, Madison Bumgarner. For about 5 days, I had Madison Bumgarner one. His ERA in the World Series, Jess, 0.25, 36 innings, one run allowed. Amazing record, and I was going to have him number one, but then after a while, how could you not have Mr. October be number one? And so I switched Reggie Jackson to that spot. All those incredible moments that he had, you know, the 1973 World Series, the 1977 World Series, five home runs in that series. He broke Babe Ruth's record, hit 3-1 game, you know, subsequently, you know, hitting a home run off Bob Welch after Bob Welch strike him out in 1978. So I just didn't have enough courage to pick against Mr. October. Who would you have picked?
Well, just because I like to disagree with you, I think I would go Mad Bum only because I felt like that moment dictated what you see now so often in World Series games. Not so often, but definitely more often than ever. I mean, what he did was really one of the first times, you know, you saw someone just not only start, but come out of the bullpen and just do what he did. And then it kind of created this expectation to see the Max Scherzers, a Clayton Kershaw, the greatest pitchers ever, also needed to be able to be the ones to come out of the bullpen. You know, I think back to even Horrell Hershiser doing that, you know, with the Dodgers, but really Mad Bum doing on a whole nother level that no one had ever done before.
Yeah. Game five of the World Series in 2014, he threw a shutout against the Royals, and then after 2 days rest, he comes back and throws five innings out of the bullpen to close out game seven. Pretty amazing stuff. All right, Jess, enjoy the off day, and I will talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Buster.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. First up, we got our pal Sanzier at Sanzier. He writes in, Game 1 saw a ratings drop of 20% versus last year's opener. Why the huge drop? Was it the teams, day of the week, or the slow-paced games we've seen in the playoffs?
What do you think's going on?
I don't know. It's kind of weird because we're seeing that the ratings have dropped, but at the same time, I've seen a lot of stuff that was like, oh, the ratings were higher than some of these NBA Finals games. I saw an interesting take from my guy Stuart Mandel, who does college football for The Athletic. He's saying that overall sports viewership is up, but the viewing audience is a little more fractured. So I'm not entirely sure. I think it just, you know, weird year. I feel like even TV executives along with baseball executives might have to kind of throw out these results a little bit. I wouldn't be too concerned about it, but, you know, I feel like on the other hand, it's just the way baseball's kind of been going. So I don't know.
I'd say it's a combination of a couple things. I believe the Rays being involved do make a difference. That's not a knock on the Rays. It's just the fact is they don't have the same type of following as a team like the Yankees or the Astros would have if they had, you know, moved on, which you would assume Fox probably would want. And I do get a lot of notes about how slow-paced these games are. I mean, typically, you know, I'm working the games on radio, and typically they're close to 4 hours or sometimes even over that. And even when there's not a bunch of scoring, and we talked about it on the podcast this year, there's going to be a conversation about what to do with the product.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we got Statue Hunter at Statue_Hunter. He writes in, I haven't heard any discussion about the artificial surface at Globe Life Field. There are only one or two fields that aren't grass. He's unsure about that. He continues, is this a factor at all on defense, alignment, and pitching strategy?
Yeah, the ballpark in Toronto, of course, and then Tropicana Field. And it's been interesting. I have not been in that park. And I, of course, because of the current circumstances, haven't got a chance to stand on the field and talk with players about what they're feeling as they're standing on the field. Kevin Cash, the Rays manager, mentioned that he really feels like that the artificial surface is a lot like that at the Trop in terms of how it plays. And that means it's pretty fast. And so I suspect that that is affecting some of the positioning they're doing.
Last one up, we got Kyle Benning at Kyle_Benning. He shouted out the Edge podcast, which we've promoted on here. We love our sponsors. And he writes in February, it seemed like the black cloud of the Astros sign stealing would hang over Major League Baseball for years, if not decades to come. Just like steroids, with everything else going on in 2020, has the taint of the scandal already worn off MLB?
You know, I don't think it has. And I tweeted back at Kyle and just asked, you know, do you think, I mean, people are talking about the Astros and the sign stealing. I mean, it felt like as the Astros were rolling along every day, you know, we were having discussions about it. It's being talked about in social media, people rooting against the Astros. I think that's going to follow those guys around their entire careers. I mean, when Jose Altuve, you know, had the throwing issue and I tweeted out, you know, I feel bad for Jose that he has to deal with that because I know, you know, how it really can affect a player's psyche. And my God, the response was unbelievable, where so many fans were so angry about, you know, what had happened in the past. So I don't think that's ever going to go away.
I think especially until fans are back in stands and can lustily boo the Astros.
Yeah.
That's going to be some catharsis that needs to be aired out. All right. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Day off tonight. That'll everyone rest up because it'll be a long weekend.
There you go. That's it for today. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.